the trouble never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that mighty sea is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, mighty sea will join the fight. On the sea or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, 'cause we know that where there's danger, he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
And welcome to the Mighty Sea Podcast. This is Dan Kirkendall, and today is going to be a special version of the podcast. Up till now, I have largely done this all on my own. I've had some guests by way of some of my buddies, my coworkers from NTO, but this time I'm actually doing an interview. And I've done interviews, but I've always been the interviewee, not the interviewer, but so this is going to be my first time doing that, which I'm looking forward to, and especially with this particular guest. I've been a fan of what he's been doing on his site. The site is hackers.org, hackers.org, .com is some funky realty company or something, but hackers.org. And the slackers.org forums, amazing stuff goes on there. This guy, Arsnake, is just insane. He's constantly posting information and has really become the celeb of WebAppSec in the last year and a half that the site's really been really taken off. He's poured tons of energy into it, has tons of really cool stuff he's doing. It's just been an impressive effort. So I'm very, very pleased to bring Arsnake to the show. Real quick before that, I do want to do a couple quick things about the show. I am working on some more episodes. I'm working on the hands-on series. I keep going back and forth on what our next topic is going to be. I had been thinking about advanced SQL injection. I have also started working on some what's called blind SQL injection. They may actually be the same episode, the same hands-on series, and it would be a mix of those two, a mix of advanced SQL injection and blind SQL. There could be some, I would like to delve further into cross-site scripting, but this is also going to be a turning point for the show. Up till now, I've really focused on helping my audience come from not really understanding application security to starting to get a handle on it. So I've been progressing. I've been trying to, just introduction to AppSec and on. At this point, I want to start really delving into some of the more advanced topics. I'm not sure how well that's all going to work in a podcast. It works nicely in a blog like Arsnake's hackers.org. Because, you can read the text. I've got to try to describe the text and have show notes. That all becomes a little harder in audio form, but I'm gonna see how it works. I'm gonna do my best and see how this is gonna work. And I want to try to start take you all from, now that I've kind of introduced these concepts, I want to start delving into some of what I do on a daily basis of really trying to fully exploit these problems and find, various different attack vectors that are gonna work. So anyway, that's where I'm gonna be going with the show. Hopefully this is something that's encouraging to you all, that I don't start losing my audience because they just can't follow it. I'm gonna do my best. If it fails, then I'll continue going back to really just dealing with the fundamentals. There's still plenty to cover there. Anyway, let's get on to the interview. I'm here with Arsnake from hackers.org, hackers.org. Your site's been just become an amazing resource lately for AppSec.
Yeah.
And So this is an honor for me to be able to interview you here. We actually had some business dealings today and got to chat for a while, so I had to drag him into the quote-unquote studio. The
studio, there you go.
Yeah. Ooh, look at the studio. My box. Studio in a box. So, well, I guess tell me a little bit about how the site started and how you got interested in AppSec.
Sure. So it's probably started about 2 years ago. I was actually looking for just a way to kind of throw up some scripts, some stuff that I was working on, some test beds. I had a lot of stuff that's long gone now. None of that stuff's there anymore. But I started the cross-site scripting cheat sheet about maybe a year and a half ago as a way for me to kind of catalog what was going on the front that I was kind of facing from an attacker's perspective. I was seeing a lot of this stuff hit my site, and I was looking for a way to kind of catalog it and put it up. But as soon as I threw a blog on there, it really just exploded, because I think I was one, especially at that time, I was one of the very few people actually talking about this stuff. And still to this day, there aren't really that many people who are really publicly, publicly talking about some of this stuff. So,
yeah, when I first saw it, it really, especially as it continued, mm-hmm. And I mentioned this to you before, it harkened me back to the days of the Hacker News Network, mm-hmm. and the stuff that Weld Pond was doing, mm-hmm. First with Loft, and he was really the guy that kind of really was pushing data out of Loft. Loft mm-hmm. was otherwise fairly quiet. Mm-hmm. And then the Hacker News Network, and that's really, I think you said one of your heroes was the...
Rainforest Puppy.
Yeah. Yeah, Rainforest Puppy was one of your heroes. Well, Chris Weissopel or Weld Pond was one of mine. Mm-hmm. Because of that, he really got me thinking mm-hmm. about network security at the time. And that's mm-hmm. what I was doing. I was a network admin. Mm-hmm. And that's what really pushed me into the security space. Mm-hmm. And, being in AppSec for the last few years, there has not been that, right. Up until what you're putting out with hackers.org. And that's encouraging for me, because I feel like really people aren't paying enough attention to this space.
Yeah.
And, what you're doing is going to end up, whether intent or not, mm-hmm. influencing people to get excited about it, because mm-hmm. now there's a place where there's this energy and news coming out all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah, I think it kind of resonated with a lot of people who felt like there wasn't a lot of new stuff coming out of security. I mean, I don't know if everyone felt the same way I did, but really for the last couple of years, there was a couple of good stuff out there, like Metasploit really, I think, kind of shook things up a little bit. But from the networking perspective, it sort of became a commodity, and a lot of people sort of have the right stuff in their network to protect themselves. They've got a firewall, they've got an IDS, and what else do you need? Maybe a VPN here and there, but for the most part, network security sort of took care of itself, and it became mostly did you remember this thing, the checklist, yes, I did this, blah, blah, blah. So when I was saying RFP kind of, I think, woke things up, at least in me, I think FRAC 55 was probably one of the most important documents out there, because he started talking about this stuff way before anyone else was, and I don't even think he really knew how impactful his stuff was going to be at the time. He wrote LibWhisker, and it sort of just spawned this thing, and even that I felt was stagnant. As soon as he left the scene, no one really took his place,
right.
And I really felt like there was a big hole there that never really got filled until recently.
So you did it.
not to toot my own horn, but no. But I felt like Jeremiah Grossman, Amit Klein, myself, some of the spy guys. There's a couple of other guys here and there working on this stuff. But for the most part, the space has been pretty quiet. Haven't been a lot of stuff. But if you, I went to RSAcon this year, and for the first time in all the years I've been going, there was a lot of web application security people there. A lot of WAFs, a lot of scanners, and it was actually really refreshing to see for the first time.
Well, when I started MightySeek.com, it was for the podcast, and I really wanted to start blogging, but I couldn't find the time to really be out there ferreting the information and interacting with everybody to try to pull it all together, because there was a lot of this stuff going on, but it was all over the place. Mm-hmm. Even sites like OWASP and now WASP, they should have been doing this.
Yes.
But because it's such a committee, mm-hmm. you can't have you know, if a member of that organization were to start blogging off the site,
mm-hmm. which they, you know, they have,
but they can't be as renegade or rogue right. about it as you can
yeah.
in your own.
Right.
And I think that's held them back from doing something like this.
I think one thing helped me when no one else in the space was able to really do this stuff is I had no ties to any company anywhere when I started the blog. And that really allowed me a level of freedom to basically, you know, for lack of a better word, kick people's asses and start making them really take responsibility for the bad web applications security all over the internet. I mean, it's,
right.
and not just from their perspective, but also the vendors and also the browsers. I mean, everybody has a place in this. And I really think that there's been a lot of mistakes, a lot of oversights, and a lot of snake oil. And I kind of just wanted to call people out on it for the first time. And after I left my last company, and I started the company I worked at the time I started the blog, I finally had the gag order taken off. And it was the first time I've really been able to explode, you know, verbal diarrhea in a way, but also really, you know, finally talk about some of the stuff that's been on my mind for years. So.
Right. Yeah, and I guess, you know, I mean, even myself, I'm part of, you know, Anti-Objectives, and so I am limited. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't go after a Google. But
why do you say Google?
The anti-google.com redirects to hacker.org. But you know, so yeah, that is true. And that was probably, I know you say you were, you know, maybe it wasn't your favorite job or whatever, but it could have been, you know, the blessing in disguise kind of thing.
Absolutely. And it was, my last job, for those of you who don't know, was completely unrelated to security. But it was an opportunity for me to take the gag order off, as well as do the research necessary to really become a resource instead of somebody who's just consuming data. It was a way for me to regurgitate the data in a way through my lens. Now, whether you agree with me or completely disagree, it's irrelevant. At least you know what I'm thinking. I try to be as honest and open on my blog as I really can be, given the various non-disclosure agreements I've got, and you know, just not wanting to piss off certain companies because I think that there's greater good to be done there.
Well, you even took it a step further in, you know, and this is great, slackers.org.
Yeah.
Again, it's, you know, the secondary domain is CKERS.org, so hackers.org comes off of that. So then slackers.org is your forums,
yeah.
Which is hilarious, you know, just the name. But that allowed it to, you know, even aside from what you're doing, mm-hmm. just the energy and the thought that you're, you know, I created a forum on MightySeek that I was hoping mm-hmm. that my podcast listeners would start interacting. But there's something about the podcast that makes it more of a consumer. You know, you become mm-hmm. a consumer, you just want to sit down and listen to it, and, mm-hmm. you know, so that's how the show ends up working for people. So fine. So my forums never took off.
Mm-hmm.
But because yours is, because of the format of a blog mm-hmm. in particular, and in difference to a podcast, is it does allow users to take what they just read, poke around with it, and then want to comment, mm-hmm. and there's other people reading, mm-hmm. right? You know, mm-hmm. a podcast, yeah, if you yeah. go and post something, who knows if anybody's even seeing the website? They're
exactly.
getting it into iTunes, and,
exactly.
you know, so there just doesn't create that sense of community for that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Slackers, I can't even keep up with Slackers. I can hardly keep up with your blog. But
I
the
can't
stuff,
either, if that makes it feel much better.
It's ridiculous. But that's great, because now there is this place where people are talking about AppSec
mm-hmm.
that just hasn't been the case for the last 4 years that I've been dealing with
that's
this.
That's so true. You know, I think one of the reasons I started the forums was actually because of the full disclosure mailing list. I realized that people, and you know, me too, I didn't want to get 10,000, I didn't want to get all the spam about all these XSS vulnerabilities and whatever. Not that that wasn't important, because it's extremely important, because those things are insecure and it needs to be dealt with, and people need to be told that those things are being vulnerable. But it really is just not a digestible format to be getting tons and tons of mail. So I wanted to throw it, and also, I purposely named my website the Web Application Security Lab. I don't want to become the single source of information for all things internet security related. That's not my goal. My goal is to aggregate a lot of other people's knowledge in a place where people can come and say, all right, there's somebody here who has the answer. I don't know who it is. It's probably not me. It's, you know, who knows who it is. And it might not even be any one particular person, but a collective of people who are able to answer that question. And email is just too slow of a medium. People can't keep up with it. They don't get to see the trace of things that happened. You don't have the historical backup. You can't link the things easily. I really just thought all of that, putting all that stuff into one place where everyone can quickly go through it, and as well as the media can look at it and say, oh my God, did you know that blah, blah, blah company is vulnerable? And they can write stories on it and shame them and get them to start working on their stuff.
Right.
In fact, there's some interesting t-shirts that someone put on the Oh My God Ponies part of the discussion forum, which are pretty funny. Your shit was broken before we got here kind of thing. You know, we're not creating these vulnerabilities, we're just raising awareness of them. So,
well, and it does, as you say, you know, I mean, people are very familiar with the power of the blogosphere. Mm-hmm. and your site, and you know, the forum isn't the blog, but mm-hmm. it still harnesses that same creative energy mm-hmm. in being able to, a lot of your posts are links to something else that you saw.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as you say, you're aggregating,
mm-hmm.
Which just harnesses the blogosphere,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's something that, like, you know, back in the day, Weld Pond and the Hacker News Network,
mm-hmm.
there wasn't a blogosphere. It was a blog,
right.
in essence, but it wasn't a blog as right. we know it today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, one thing I do fairly consistently is if I find something interesting on the forums, I actually will link to it from the blog. And the reason is I think some people just don't have the time, like you said, like you, for instance, don't have the time to go through all those forums, and nor would I expect anyone to. What I really want that to be is that's everyone's site. That's the site for anyone to go to and talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Right.
But the blog is for my thoughts, and that's for a resource for me to allow people to understand what's going on. And point them to the correct location on wherever they need to be going to find that information without having them to actually interact with the site in any shape or form. Because there's a lot of companies, very big companies, and a lot of vendors and a lot of other people who read the blog on a religious basis but would never post. So
right. Yeah, and I don't think I've, you know, I read Slackers, but I hardly ever, I think I've posted a couple times on there.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, I don't know. I just end up having, you know, a better time just kind of hanging out and reading
yeah.
it. And you know, I know if I do post, I have to put a lot of energy and thought into it because I'm going to be scrutinized.
That's actually a compliment to me, because one of the things I've seen happen to a lot of forums and a lot of blogs is they kind of degrade really quickly. They start up as one thing and then people get bored or they change or they... whatever, and I want to provide a consistency in the amount of posts as well as the quality of posts from the day I started until today.
Yeah, there's not all that much trolling going on in this.
Not really. I mean, it happens every once in a while, and I do nuke it when I see it, but for the vast majority of the time, I don't think newbies really would dare do it, honestly. I mean,
well, I'm not a newbie.
No, you know what I mean. And it's,
no,
not,
but yeah,
it's not even because they fear repercussions from me, but just there's so many big fish in the sea
right
there at the same time, like, why would you mess with it? And we have had people do it, and it's kind of annoying, but whatever, it gets dealt with pretty rapidly.
Now, of course, this has to be asked. Do you get, obviously, you're a big target because of what you're doing, and you're a web app. Your site
yeah.
is a, so, I mean, is your, you know, have you suffered any hacks? Have you?
I think we've had maybe 3 or 4 cross-site scripting vulnerabilities in this site total, but that's too many, you know. That's 4 too many. We have had a couple of potential compromises that weren't successful, and the only reason they weren't successful is because luck of God, you know, something was changed on the back end that protected us, kind of last minute sort of changes. But we have never suffered a major vulnerability, but it's a certainty, I guarantee that it absolutely will happen at some point. I've kind of resigned myself to it. We already have backups in place for all that stuff. And frankly, I'm not sure it would prove anything because we don't actually write any of our own software. We modify some of the software, but we don't. We're starting with pretty much all open source, pretty much everything. You know, even everything, down the operating system in general.
Right.
It's all open source.
Yeah, I mean, and it is, like you say, it is a certainty. Because, and that's, you know, that's part of the point with AppSec, is it's not solved.
Right.
You know, and that's part of what makes it fun for me, is this is a space, and I've talked about this before, it's unlike network security where there are, network security is not solved, quote unquote.
Right.
There still are problems, and you're still going to suffer hacks and vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But the things to do to get there mm-hmm. are understood.
Right.
But in AppSec, they're not yet.
No.
We still, like, you know, if I were to ask you, okay, what, you know, if you could, you know, build the best web app firewall, mm-hmm. you know, how would you do it? Like,
I'd unplug it from the wall.
But yeah, I mean, there's no solution yet.
No,
there's just incremental things that you can do to be, you know, I talk about this a lot. I talk about, you know, if you and a buddy are being chased by a lion, you only have to be faster than your buddy.
Absolutely.
And that's really...
Yeah, but it's not for lack of trying. You know, one thing that's really interesting about my site in particular is not necessarily the quantity of exploits, because it's unfathomable how many people try to attack me and how often. It is absolutely ridiculous. The guy who helps me run the site, it's a very full-time job keeping that site up to date and patched and everything else.
I can imagine.
But what the kind of remarkable thing is actually watching the traffic. I learn just as much from the people attacking me as I learn from attacking other people's applications. And that's one of those things where we don't really have a really good way to show everybody what we see, except for anecdotal evidence. Obviously I can't just spool my logs to a file somewhere, because there's a lot of sensitive information in there. A lot of people are doing not very bright things with how they're testing their applications, that kind of thing. But we try to be really careful with how we present that data, but also show that there are a lot of vulnerabilities that are out there that, and we know a lot more about the public than I think they would feel comfortable knowing that we know.
Right.
And that's kind of how I spawned that Matt Cutts thing, was we can track down the individual users, and in that one particular case I went a little bit further than I would normally go, but people are a lot more vulnerable than I think they really realize.
So okay, you mentioned Id. So Id is your partner on the site?
Yeah, he's actually my business partner as well. He happens to be, and he gets very, very little coverage on the site, but he's really the man behind the myth here. You know, he's the guy who does a huge bulk of the work of keeping the site up to date and having it online. But he also happens to be one of the best network security people in the world. So if you think it's all Web Application Security Lab, that's not totally true. We do a lot of network stuff as well. So he has an opportunity to see from a network perspective a lot of interesting things that happen, and we get a lot of basically, you guys, my fans, you guys are a ridiculous wealth of information every time you hit my site, with the types of browsers, with the types of attacks, with the things you tell me. Like, I learn more from my audience than I think they learn from me, and I hope I can just give them back some of that stuff.
Well, okay, so you mentioned he's your business partner, so mm-hmm. you're just getting launching.
Yeah, we started a new company called SecTheory. We started it in about October timeframe, but it really hasn't taken off until a month or so ago. And I've really just started full time on it myself this week, which is why I'm here instead of at work. He's a really, really good resource, and we've been tag teaming. So I've been focusing on the web app sec side and on the network security side, and we've been hitting a lot of good customers already in just the short time that we've been online. But ultimately, I kind of want to grow it as a boutique security consulting company, where I'm able to come in and like I do on the blog, I can actually, on a microscopic scale, tell you exactly what's going on, anything that's happening. But I can't really do that if I'm working with a major company. So I'm, although I am talking with all the major companies out there, I really don't want to work with them. I'd much rather work with a small company that I can really help out and make a big difference, versus a big company where I'm only making a minor difference.
So. Right. So, I mean, in terms of your who you want to consult with.
Yeah, in type of consulting agreements and even people I just generally talk to. In fact, the only reason I talk with the major guys at all is because most of them have Android browsers, or they actually affect the search industry in general, and I think that affects a much larger group, you know, a much larger population than you can pretty much get anywhere else.
So that's sectheory.com?
Yep,
is the site.
Sectheory.com.
Well, you know, that's, you know, I guess we're glad to have you back. You've been out of AppSec for, well, I mean, not that you've been completely out, obviously. No, Hackers.org is thriving.
Yes.
But professionally.
It was an internal conflict I had for a long time. I was in, I was out, and back in. But I think right now in my life, I cannot think of a more interesting place to be. I thought there might be other interesting places. I searched around. I tried other professions, but ultimately this one kept dragging me back in. It's just way too interesting. And in particular, web application security is the one of the very few places that needs a ton of work, and there aren't that many people doing that work. So that just feels like home. It's perfect.
Yeah, it is very much, and I think I've talked about this before on my show, it's still such a niche.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a niche in a niche.
Yeah, it is.
Because security is still a niche.
Yes.
You know, so we're like, you know,
yeah.
It's way down the line.
Yeah.
And it also crosses boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
That's another part that makes it interesting for me.
The
security guys normally are the network admins. They manage the firewalls of the servers.
Mm-hmm.
They're there. You know, they'll push stuff to the desktops or whatever, but they're really, you know, the network admin guys. Whereas AppSec, it's applications, so it crosses large parts of companies, you know?
That's absolutely true.
You got the marketing guys who are pushing features, you got the developers who are actually implementing them and having to understand how to build security into it, QA departments,
production,
and the security guys are all playing in this and all part of solving this problem.
Yep, absolutely.
It's insane.
It is insane.
And that's where it's cool. I think, you know, rather than starting up a new consulting company with just AppSec, it is critical to be able to cross, you know, have it there to cross all parts of that.
And in fact, a large part of why I thought web applications were initially interesting was actually something that just recently finally got public, which is the stuff that Jeremiah published at Black Hat, the internet domain scanning stuff in JavaScript space. It was actually an idea I had 4 or 5 years ago, but I wanted to do it in Java, and I never got around to learning Java. So I went and talked with him at some point about a year and a half ago, and I said, you know, I want to do this, but you know, I know it's possible, I just have never figured out exactly how. And so he actually went ahead and built it. But why I thought that was interesting is because it finally crossed that space where network security was now completely owned by web application security. There was no chance for network security to protect itself from something that theoretically it should have no interest in whatsoever. I mean, it's like whatever. It's sitting outside the DMZ. It's not even protected, really. It may not even be running anything mission critical. It may not even have any databases attached to it, but yet it can still... And it may not even be our network. It might be some other web application somewhere else on the internet that my people are connecting to, but yet it still affects the network. And that was the first time I think we finally got network security people to raise their head and say, wow, you know, this is a much bigger problem than we originally thought it was. And when we started doing other stuff like finding out your history, and now we found the problems with the Google desktop through anti-DNS binning, and the right. anti-spray there, and all these other things that are now affecting not just a browser in a single session on a single website, like that's kind of interesting with XSS, but now we're talking about attacking intranets, you know, major industrial espionage. You know,
right.
How do you really affect the outcome of a security security posture through something as simple as a web interface? You know, that's...
Well, and now JITCO adds to, you know, again, just the next step.
It does. Although that's, I mean, really that's all PDP's, mostly
right.
PDP's work, but yeah, I mean, that really does allow an attacker to do some pretty interesting crawling. I think there's other ways to do the exact same thing that are less sexy, but also require less CGI proxies.
Right.
But anyway, but that's exactly right. If you have code execution, a JavaScript on people's desktops, you can pretty much do whatever they can do. And if they can do stuff like crawl people's websites, then that's what you can do, and you can get them to find and disclose all the information to you through their browser. It's really the first time that I'm aware of that you can treat other people's computers as your own proxy, regardless of whether they want you to or not.
Well, and this is where some of it was extremely misunderstood, and it wasn't just the public, it was also us. Mm-hmm. When cross-site scripting first came around, I completely discounted it. I was like, okay, so what? They can redirect me to a porn site.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, I don't want to see the porn site, but you know, who cares, right? I mean, I'll close it.
Oh, don't lie. You want to see the porn site.
So I'll close it. All right. So, but once you start to realize that it's not just about popping up something in the user's browser, mm-hmm. you know, an alert or sending them off to another site,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's about stealing their session cookies. It's about scanning your intranet, you know, phishing. Yeah. Once you start getting into that realm, then you start realizing this is a privacy, compliance issue. This is, you know, internet security
yeah.
is impacted.
Yeah.
Now it's starting to become real, and although some of these tools could be dangerous in the hands of script kiddies, they are valuable to the community for public awareness.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, you know. This yeah, is pretty cool.
I think Jikdo got a bad name, and I might be partially to blame for that because it can very much be used for the dark side of the community. But honestly, in having looked at it, really there's really no difference between looking at PDP's code, which is already out there, just aggregating it all together. But I really do believe that you're right. There was a huge misperception about how JavaScript in general could be used, and honestly, it's not even JavaScript. You can do a lot of this stuff without even having JavaScript. I mean, the only thing I don't have without JavaScript is be able to read cross domains. I can send packets across domains. I can steal your browser history, and I can do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, you can put it all in the create a hidden image or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, it's
exactly.
Just HTML injection.
Just HTML injection is really nasty, and the thing is, I don't even have to get the person to go to a bad website. I can do it on a good website.
Right.
That's the really critical part here. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, I don't surf where sites. I don't go to porn sites. That used to be the mantra. You know, like, well, did you surf a bad site? Well, that's why you got the Trojan or spyware or whatever you got, you know? Well, all right, but you don't have to do that anymore. You surf good sites. And in fact, one of the browser security screw-ups, I thought, at the time was Netscape's precursor to 8.0. I'm not sure if that was made public or not. I think it was public, the very first version of that, where you could actually set people's browsers. They would set the security models based off of how much you trust the site. So let's say I trust Microsoft because they're a good website.
Correct.
Well, it would lower its security settings because you go to Microsoft. But it happens to lower your security settings on the sites that you have the most to lose from with the most dynamic interfaces. I mean, it was like completely opposite. If you trust that site, you should have the worst security setting, the worst in terms of most restrictive, to protect you from all the vulnerabilities that could happen on that website.
Right.
But it's, I think there's been a...
Well, and IE has totally accepted that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, Microsoft has, you know, it's all about the which privacy or
exactly.
not what is it called? What is the term?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the trust zones.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, well, hold on. If this is my bank,
yeah.
I want to essentially, like you say, trust it the least.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I do not like this site. I don't trust it because that's all my information is.
Right.
I want to protect it the most. It's like, do you trust your money to be sitting out in the middle of the street? Just because you trust money doesn't mean you trust it to be sitting out there in the middle of nowhere. You know,
right.
You want to protect it as much as possible. Put it in a vault. Put it underground. Have security guards all around it. You know, it's like... people just really never got that. I still think that there's a lot of work to be done there. But even worse, I think, is like browser plugins. Firefox. I mean, Firefox by itself, by a single application, if you turn on all its security settings and really, really harden that thing, sure, very, very secure. But then you add in tons of, I mean, Firebug just had a big vulnerability. Grease Monkey scripts have had.
Grease Monkeys. Dangerous. It's a clever idea, but I think it's a really dangerous plugin.
But ultimately, I think where the major security faux pas there is allowing the same trust models for any client-side security application that wants to talk to Firefox. It's not Firefox that's screwed up. It's the fact that Firefox trusts its modules, and the modules weren't built by the same people. They don't have the same trust built into them. There could be tons of different types of exploits, code execution, all kinds of random stuff. So
even the plugins themselves could have full-blown back doors in them.
Absolutely, and actually I've talked with Firefox about that exact topic at one point. So then they had this concept of signed or not signed, and but
the
who's
signing
really
process.
Watch that?
Once you do it, once you get a nice plugin that is safe initially,
exactly.
You get a little trust in the community.
Exactly.
You release an update that's got some bad stuff in it.
Exactly. So now we've got three disparate things that are talking together. Well, really four issues on the internet right now that are all talking with one another. We have vulnerable applications, things like buffer overflows and stuff, and we can do buffer flow injection using JavaScript of all things. Wade just put something up and bind you. Then you have the websites themselves that have vulnerabilities in them. Then you have the browsers that allow those vulnerabilities to run and random trust settings and random plugins and all that stuff. And lastly, you have the person behind the keyboard who actually trusts all those random things that you just did to them. They believe the phishing site is really where they should be ending their bank records. You know, there's a certain amount of social engineering involved with a lot of this stuff, or they have to allow their browser to be doing weird things in the background. And some of that stuff is social engineering, some of it's not. But ultimately, there is a person behind the keyboard that needs to know better. So four disparate things that we have to overcome to solve one problem. And it's not just one browser. We're talking about every browser. And it's not just one app, but it's every web app under every type of programming language with every type of random firewall in front of it and random squid and caching proxies and every type of, you have the array of problems here in a single, what you're calling a niche thing, is unfathomably large. And frankly, there's only a handful of people who are even looking at it.
And of those that really, really understand it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I would dare say that no one in the industry understands it all.
Well, that's true.
And I would even go so far as to say no one in the industry understands all of one of those things I just said. A lot of us have a pretty good handle on a good chunk of that stuff, but there's no way we can just sit there and say, I know that if you do this, this, and this, you'll be secure, because I would be lying.
Yeah, there is no quote-unquote solution.
No.
They're just... steps to get better and better.
Exactly. It's a process, but it's a process that's really not well understood yet.
No, and it's important because more and more of our content, our data, is being pushed out to web apps. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about earlier, before the recording, our medical data and all. There's so much stuff being pushed out into, and not just on the internet. But we're also talking intranets.
Mm-hmm.
HR departments on intranets, there could be all kinds of mm-hmm. information leakage and very dangerous stuff there that this stuff needs to continually be improved.
Mm-hmm.
And without the public being brought to awareness, mm-hmm. it's not going to be.
And there's this very weird trust relationship that intranet sites in particular have with other applications. Like, it's okay for this to accept data from this one IP address or these series of IP addresses or this
right.
class C or whatever. But is that really okay? Do you really trust every single thing that's going to happen from that domain? Are you sure that domain can't be tricked into doing something else? Really, that's what this entire chunk of the industry is about, is a series of weird tricks that you can do to make people do things that they shouldn't be able to do or shouldn't want to do or whatever.
Well, there's a lot of assumptions of trust.
Exactly.
The browser trusts the website to give it pretty decent information.
And the consumer ultimately trusts the website not to screw them and not to have vulnerabilities.
Well, and in the website, or in the web applications, trust the user to give it useful and
exactly.
proper information.
Exactly.
And that's any breakdown in any one of these things just is a mess.
The whole thing fall apart. And that's why this is such an interesting field. Firewalls are fantastic. They provide a really valuable service, but they are completely worthless for protecting you against this type of attack. In fact, one of the original reasons I wanted to go down the process of doing the internet scanning thing was not so that I could scan the internet, because I really couldn't care less about what's on the internet. I really just wanted to hack routers. And kind of prove that through a web page, you're pretty much vulnerable to whatever I want to do to pretty much anything that's on any web interface anywhere. And now we've finally proven that. In fact, we've taken a many steps beyond there. But that was the original point of pretty much all of my initial research, and to raise awareness for the network security guys primarily, because these are a bunch of very smart guys who could bring to bear a lot of the solutions to a lot of these problems, but they aren't thinking about them right now. They're so focused on kind of the 2 years ago type technology that, I just don't think they've caught up yet, and I really liked it a lot more help. And that's sort of what the lab's all about, is to try to aggregate all of that help into one place that's digestible by a lot of different people.
Well, just to wrap this up, I mean, we just, as a member of the community, completely appreciate what you're doing and respect your work. You're doing awesome stuff. You know, I point people to your site all the time because just as a starter point, cheat sheet, the cross-site scripting cheat sheet, tremendous resource. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still have no idea how you get that thing to work. The HTML is a mess. It had to be a nightmare, but you went to the effort, and it's a totally valuable resource. So
yeah, absolutely.
Want to thank you. Shake your hand. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it doesn't work on audio, but awesome job. Appreciate it. Arsnake, everybody. That's it.
It was nice being here.
All right. Thanks for being here. All right. Well, that wraps up the interview with Arsnake. That's the end of the show this month or week or whenever to get the next episode out. Anyway, again, thank you to Arsnake for coming on the show. Appreciate it. Hope to have you back.
Save the day. That means that Mighty Seed is on the way.